Welcome to Vistage Live, the place you can come to for insights, knowledge, and perspectives from a range of experts who can help your small and mid-sized business make a great big impact.
Dr. Chris Stevenson is a transformational business leader with over 25 years of executive experience, specializing in turning underperforming organizations into market leaders. With a doctorate in strategic decision making and hands-on leadership across 12 countries, Chris brings unique perspectives on navigating business challenges, identifying opportunities, and developing high-performing teams. So now, as a mentor to business leaders, Chris draws on his experience across 12 countries to help CEOs navigate complexity, identify opportunities, and drive transformational success. Chris Stevenson, welcome to Vistage Live.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
It's great to have you here. So tell me a little bit about your doctorate and your research.
Okay.
When did you do your doctorate? Was it quite recent?
No, it started back in around 2005, something like that.
Oh, yeah, right, okay.
But it took, all up around 7 years to get through it, mostly because of, all sorts of reasons. But one of the big reasons it took so long was it used a philosophical approach called grounded theory, which says really your research is grounded in facts and information and interviews and real things that happen. So whilst you can come up with, I figured out the theory as to why a certain thing happens, you need to be able to connect that to real things that happened in the world and prove that they're actually relevant. So a lot of my research took a lot of time because I needed to sit down with top management. It was all about boards and top management. Top management, CEOs, board members, board chairs, consultants to board members and chairs in some of the biggest companies in the country, really, to get a sense for how are strategic decisions really, how do you come about making a strategic choice? How do you get to it? What level of confidence do you have that you've made the right choice? And then what do you do to make sure that you can implement it the way you've imagined it? And then do you ever go back and check that it was correct? So I used to travel around the globe I spent an awful lot of time in aeroplanes, and I'd watch pretty much every movie.
Yep.
But the traveling inevitably involved me flying somewhere to get involved in a board meeting or a management meeting, strategic meeting.
Yep.
And oftentimes I'd sit there in the meeting thinking, boy, we've got several choices we can make here, one, two, or three. And the meeting would resolve to say, let's take option three. And I'd find myself saying, I would have taken option one or two, not three. And I think I may have mentioned once before that I wonder whether it's just the meetings that I'm in where what you would think was the obvious choice didn't get up to be the obvious choice. And it got me thinking, as I was traveling a lot, I thought, I'd like to research this a little bit and see if there's anything that supports the idea that oftentimes top management, and that's top management being boards and the executive team that are working for the CEO, if there's any sort of consistency around whether they go and make suboptimal strategic choices. Does it happen? Does it happen a lot? And
back to you in those meetings. I love when you kind of saying, was I the common denominator?
Yes.
Why? What was it about your strategic thinking and decision making that diverged from what you were seeing around you on boards and executive teams?
That's a very interesting question. So it seems, with hindsight, after the research, so what happens is we've all got our own mental models of how things work.
Yeah.
And, for example, oftentimes we conflate what's good for the company with what's good for us.
And give me an example of that.
Look, an example of that might be if I'm bonused on achieving my targets, I might say that it's a great idea to put lower targets in place because I make my targets, I make my bonuses, and, the shareholders won't mind because we'll tell them that's all that we can do. So But it's that and other things too, where it's not overtly people saying, I'm going to cheat the system. It's somebody saying, what would be comfortable for me personally and how can I shape the thinking of the company to support what's good for me?
But that may be subconscious too, Mark.
That's absolutely subconscious.
Because that's the mental model. I'm running this business, so this is what's going to be the right thing.
Look, indeed, and sometimes, boards can be very, very risk averse, so they always want to take a really safe path. And oftentimes, you need to be a bit bolder than that. So sometimes just habit. So let's reduce all the risks. And you get to a point where you reduce the risks so much that it's difficult to be innovative and be a bit different. So that can hold things back.
And so in your research, you were looking at this and you said that there's different mental models that people hold.
Indeed, yeah.
As people and as leaders. What else did you kind of uncover that was interesting for you?
It was fascinating. So there's some rules around how you go about doing doctoral research. And part of that is actually you've got to demonstrate that there's a knowledge gap in the world that you can fill. So you can't just, for example, copy somebody else's research and they'll say it's been done before. So what that meant was I had to start building up from how do people make choices, questions like do men and women work differently in a business context. Do women make better decisions than men or vice versa?
I can't let that go. And?
The answer is no. They're pretty much the same. It's indistinguishable.
Yes.
Sometimes people argue about a feminine approach to decision making. And there is such a thing, but it's not really distinguished along gender. A feminine approach is an approach to life that many men and women and teams adopt to say we're going to be a bit more caring.
Right.
So, but the answer is no, absolutely not. There's no proof anywhere that we make men and women make different decisions.
Interesting.
So women are absolutely as good off, possibly often better than the others.
It depends on the person.
It depends on the person. Mm. So the research started with how do people make choices? Is there any difference between the way people make choices? And yes, there is. Our individual personalities drive how we do it. And then how does that translate into teams? And then how does that translate into top management teams? Mm. And then how does that translate up to boards? And where are the problems? And the research, not just my research, but research by people like McKinsey says only 15% of top management teams and boards consistently make and execute good strategic choices. So
it's really low.
85% are suboptimal to some extent.
Wow.
So, and to be fair, I think a lot of the problem manifests, a lot of the big problems manifest around execution. So it's one thing to be in a boardroom or a management meeting and make a great choice. Oftentimes companies don't follow that up with budgeting for it, pushing it, making it strategically important, hiring the right people and so on. So, but yeah, there's a lot of strategic decision making that either is wrong in the first instance because they haven't looked at all the options and they haven't optimized, or fails because they made a great decision but no one implements it properly. So
tell me about good strategic decision making. What are the elements of that or the drivers of that?
That's a really good question. So the problem, part of the problem with strategic decision making is we humans are wired to think about things in particular ways. And one of the things that people aren't very good at is dealing with complexity.
Mm.
It's not obvious to us, but what we do is we start to simplify things.
Yeah.
And we're in the information age. We're now getting hundreds and hundreds of times more data than we used to get when we started making strategic choices a few decades ago. So what people tend to do when they're overloaded with choices and complexity is to just recall things that kind of feel right, but they make mental models that give them short circuits, shortcuts.
I've seen this before.
Yeah.
This is what I did last time.
That's it.
I know this person, they did that, so we'll just do that.
That's right. And so it's very easy to reach for something that seems like an obvious solution without actually saying, well, does it support where we want to go? And compounding that is a thing called what we're called anchoring that humans like to do. So once we've decided that that's the thing that could work, we're then very, very reluctant to move away from that and consider something else. Even if the facts start to say, look, this is not such a great choice, what we tend to do, subconsciously again, is to abandon any information that says this is not good and only go searching for information that supports our point of view. So there's some of the things. And, people tend to go into a bit of an isolation sometimes when they're making some of these choices and information that doesn't support it, it keeps popping up. They kind of speak less and less and less and kind of shrink into themselves a bit. And really, they should be doing the opposite. They should be saying to the people around them, say, hey, look, I'm not sure I'm right here. Can you guys give me your views on whether you think this is right? And that makes a remarkable difference because diversity is very powerful.
Well, diversity is very powerful. Mm-hmm. Adam Grant talks about everyone needing a challenge group.
Mm.
So it's not your normal people. It's not the people that you surround yourself with, because they're probably going to think like you or just reinforce whatever you're doing. So that idea of a challenge group. When you're talking, Chris, about this decision-making, the traps that people can fall into at board and leadership level, that can happen through a whole organization though, of course, because a whole lot of an organization is a whole lot of people making decisions.
Look, absolutely.
Day in, day out.
So it does happen at every level. Mm. It happens. It happens at home.
Yeah.
When you go to the supermarket and you kid yourself that you're buying really healthy food, and then you go home and read the packet and go, oh, no. But it does happen all the way through. But the thing about top management teams and boards is when they make strategic choices, it has massive impact. Mm. If the guy who's on the receiving dock stacks boxes in the wrong place, nothing bad's really going to happen. You just fix it. But if, as a CEO, you commit a company to a massive spend, then and it doesn't work out, then all of a sudden, there's jobs to go and all sorts of things like that. So I think it's orders of magnitude of impact.
I understand. So how did you apply this research into businesses that you've been able to turn around, that you've been able to see significant growth?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Again, it's so one of the first things that I thought I needed to do was to say, is there a simple formula that can allow me to speed read an organization? Because I didn't have 3 years to sit down and do detailed research on this organization. And it took a while to develop it, but there's quite a strong correlation between the level of politics in an organization and the quality of strategic decision making.
Oh, so, tell me more about that.
Yeah. So if you find an organization where, by the way, there are politics in every company and they're not always bad, they can be a force for good. But if you find that decisions get made in corridor conversations with two or three people there and not everybody that's a shareholder, if you find that you get into intractable places and things just happen and there's no transparency, then you've got politics. So the more politics there are, the more likely we're going to get poor strategic choices being made. And there's three probably anchors that can shrink politics down to positive politics. And the main ones are a CEO that leads from the front, someone that's really strong and says, we've got a plan. We've decided what kind of behavior we want in this company. We do want diversity. We do want appearance. So that's key. Another cornerstone is procedures, really. How do we go about making choices? It can't be, as I implied earlier, it can't be just two guys that are in favor of a particular thing making a decision without asking everybody else in the corridor somewhere. It has to be an open process. And I think the last point is that the board or the governance has to say, certain ways that we're going to run this company for the shareholders and for everybody else. And you, top management team, are expected to work within those rules. We don't want you inventing your own stuff and wandering off the reservation.
What about mid-sized businesses that don't have a board or don't have a governance board? Because you see a lot of those. I know you're working with more of
Absolutely.
Those.
Absolutely. Look, it's the principles are much the same. So, because often people double hat in small businesses, there's fewer people, it's really, really important that you have the ability to, as a team, to stop and say, does this make sense? Does it really make sense? Have we really looked at all the options? Are we kidding ourselves, breathing our own exhaust fumes and just trying to justify our favourite thing? Or have we really looked at the whole lot? And it's a disciplinary thing. I think, again, this is where the CEO is much, much more important. The CEO has to be able to say, stop. You know, I want different types of people in the room. I want to be able to look at this from not only is it the most obvious and correct thing to do, but does it support innovation? Does it support where the people want to go? Have we engaged our customer base to say, does this make sense to you? Are we moving you forward? Are we actually getting in the right direction? So
you've talked about politics. If there's kind of politics overplayed towards the negative, that's going to be indicator of poor strategic decision making.
It's a marker, yeah.
A marker.
Yeah.
What else would you be looking for?
Look, I think good leadership is absolutely important. That's probably the number one thing. So a great CEO that's balanced, that listens, that's appreciated, that is strong. We don't want to look for autocrats that just dictate. We've got to have CEOs that can have empathy and can say, I don't know. You're my team. I need you to help me figure this through. I'll own it, but I'm open to it. But also I think there's got to be a process. There's got to be a fairly clear picture of who makes decisions in the organization. Whose job is it to make decisions on particular things? And then how are you going to go about doing that? And they have to withstand some sort of scrutiny later. So, if things do work out really well, we can say, well, how did you get to that? It was a great thing. And conversely, if they work out not so well, what can we learn from that? Mm. But there's got to be, as I think you said earlier, Steph, there's got to be safe places for people who aren't necessarily direct stakeholders in decisions to be able to say, let me help you look at this and ask you some questions and see if we can refine it.
It can be a really good way to have your blind spots held up to you by someone who isn't invested in your business but cares about you as a leader.
Absolutely, indeed. And I think, one of the things we've spoken about before is as a CEO, sometimes it can be difficult to—
And lonely.
And lonely. It can be difficult to say, look, I don't quite know what to do here. Yeah. I really need some advice. And there's nothing wrong with getting good, if you've hired good people, put them to work.
Mm.
Get them to challenge you. And, once as a CEO, you can lean in and say, you know what, I don't have to know everything. Yes, I own the responsibility, but these folks have been hired because they're the best in the class, the best I can afford. I want to know what they think. And, of course, you have to draw, there's the quiet ones that you have to draw out, must insist that they contribute. There's the ones that always have an opinion on everything that need to be maybe dampened down a little bit. So it's that kind of dynamic is really where you need to get to. And particularly for small business, you've actually got to be able to say, what level of confidence have I got that this is our best strategic choice and does it pass all these litmus tests?
Really interesting. So speaking of having small, mid-sized businesses kind of testing their decision-making, you're a Vistage chair, building a group. So tell us why you're interested in this shift for you, I guess, from running the business.
I guess it is a bit of a shift. Look, I really enjoyed my time as the CEO of several companies and it hasn't always worked out, I might add, right up front. but by and large, mostly, it's worked out to be very, very successful. And the more I did it, the better I got at it, and the better results we had. And it became obvious to me that certain key things about businesses are similar no matter what industry you're in.
Mm.
There may be some exceptions to that, but by and large, what industry you're in. And, you know, things like hiring is just so super, super critical. You know, a friend of mine once said to me that we inevitably hire people for their skills, but we only ever fire them for their attitude. So why not hire them?
For both.
For the right attitude,
yeah.
For sure.
And teach them the skills.
Yeah, look, one of my learnings was if I hire really good people with the right attitude, that I can turn them loose and they'll figure it out somehow or another. Or they'll come back to me and say, it can't be done. But so good people was really good fun. So I've lots of lessons like that I've gotten to, the importance of innovation, importance of making decisions. And if you make a decision that's clearly not right, make another one.
Mm.
You don't have to stick with it. You can change and, you know, be ambitious, listen to your customers, those sorts of things. And these are all, I suppose, 101, but sometimes in the heat of the battle, if you're the CEO, you've got investors that want a return. Everybody wants a productivity dividend. The customers want better products. The employees want a pay rise. And we've got more and more data and complexity coming into it. It's really quite difficult to sit there and focus and concentrate. And it's great to have a network of people that are in a similar, possibly a different industry, often a different industry, to give you a perspective and say, you know what, that happened to me. This is how I dealt with it. And they may say, and by the way, it didn't work, so don't do that. Or they may say, it worked out wonderfully or it moved us forward. I like that. I think it's a lot of fun to sit with people that want to become successful CEOs. And oftentimes, my experience is they do have the answers themselves.
Mm.
They just need somebody to talk it through and give them some reassurance. But also remind them that if they make a decision that's suboptimal, then you can change it.
I really like that.
Yeah.
If you make the wrong decision, make another one.
Yeah.
I really like that. So then my last question for you, Chris, what kind of members are you looking for?
I'm looking for, I think, people that are interested in innovation and growth and adventure. I have had a lot of my life doing company turnarounds where I've, you know, the plane's going to crash. Chris, can you fix it?
Yeah.
And that can be quite thrilling, but it's tiring. But in turning companies around, figuring out where's our sweet spot, how do we address that, what kind of people do we need, bringing the customers involved, actually. I had a huge customer a few years ago for this company I was turning around, and they were so cross with our company. And I brought them in and said, look, I've got all my best people. We've built a full journey map of what you're doing, including all your people, all the handoff. I can see where we're going wrong. And it was a diagram about 3 meters long of every step along the way. And they stepped back and said, you're the first people that have actually shown us that you really understand what we want. Now I've got confidence. Let's work together to get it fixed. So those sorts of things are really quite powerful things to do.
So I've heard from you that you're looking for CEOs and business owners,
yep,
who are interested in innovation, growth, and I love adventure.
Yep.
I think that you bring so much to the role of a mentor, of a CEO mentor and a Vistage chair, and your research is really interesting. Thank you so much for sharing with us your perspectives on decision-making and strategic decision-making. And it's been wonderful to have you as a guest on Vistage Live.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much. You're
Thank
too kind.
You. So that's it for Vistage Live today. Thank you for joining us. Make sure you subscribe so you can listen to us each episode. And for more information about Vistage, check us out on vistage.com.au.